playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the all-new Irish Times Weekend. With new writers like Marion Keyes and Sean Moncrief, your weekend's in good hands. Playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
I must play you two pieces of music I came across on RTE Radio this week, both with a Scottish connection. One on RTE Gold and one on a show which plays on Radio 1 and Radio Na Gaeltachta. That show is on Scott. In this week's programme, we heard presenter Sean O'Henney introducing a Scottish rock folk fusion band. And wait until you hear their name.
The Red Hot Chili Pipers, Give Me All Your Lovin'.
The Red Hot Chili Pipers from On Sco, Saturday on Radio 1 and Radio Na Gaeltachta. Then on Monday, Scotland provided the inspiration for this song on RTE Gold. It's from the Limerick band The Hitchers, their single, Strachan. Gordon Strachan was a star Scottish footballer, and the song tells the story of two dramas in the writer's life, one in the living room and one on the TV.
She waited for the match to start a fight up with me. She said, what's that you're watching? It's a program about art. She said, a program about art. I said, a program about art. And then the greatest midfield artist of them all walked out onto the park. The crowd were on their feet and they whistled and they cheered for the tiny wee Scotsman with the copper-coloured hair. She said, you just don't care, you never listen, you know. Luke Gitchell to Wetherill, and Wetherill to Derrigo. Derrigo knocks it onto Fairclough. Fairclough looks for speed. Now she's ranting like a lunatic. I'm switching off that telly.
The song is taken from the album with the great title of It's All Fun and Games Till Someone Loses an Eye. Strachan by The Hitchers, and you can hear the whole song on the RTE player. It was from the programme Fool's Gold, presented by Pat O'Mahony on Monday on the digital station RTE Gold. One of the liveliest shows this week has to have been the podcast Bjor Agan, or Barely Alive. It features three young women chatting about everything and anything. The women are Siún Ní Gwin, Sinéad Ní Uachán, agus Anya Ní Vreeslán. This week, they were talking about Derry Girls.
Go on, over the Lena.
Yeah. Don't be trusting that boy. That boy's a fly bastard. They're just brilliant. They're so gruff, I guess, so grumpy, but really, to cream more again. They're not but a bunch of English bastards. If we take that in the place, she's in Jern Jar. Sorry, girls.
Oh, that's a whole mash. That's a whole grown and let Tommy Tiernan.
Tommy gets a mustache, but creepy.
I know.
Killing
felon shit,
though.
Then, don't ask me how, Siún got around to telling a story about trying to get through security to see Bill Clinton and Dundalk with braces. Siún had the braces, yeah. Not Bill Clinton.
Because it's given them the metal detector sharp for because we slant all. Niacomish slant all, Martin Reeve Mahil, Kicker over Mahoney, Madahun Dalgan. agus cofn fi train tracks arm sy'n mynd tweet all your margin fi fatty sy'n ddwn arm nach lyg fi eisiach me treat metal detector like I basically was a dairy girl. I was like, fuck this, I'm not going to get in here.
And then she recalled a story about a friend in school who thought it would be only gas to post her a bag of suspicious powder.
Cuivin Livner be anthrax on.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
This is so
like
weird.
Like a poodle.
Yeah. Hershey, I'm not kidding. Yeah, Hershey, anthrax, Maria, plur, emola. I guess Hershey's a fuss togame.
From the podcast Bio Air Agen, which is published every Thursday night. Their discussion this week also included crime dramas.
And this is his 22nd investigation, put into print anyway.
And Arena covered crime stories too. Apparently there's a tradition in Norway of reading crime dramas at Easter time. And Arena decided that this was the time of the year to review recently released crime fiction with Declan Burke talking to presenter Kay Sheehy.
My darling Clementine, the film, they all have an important part to play in this
yes,
novel.
Yes, because as you say, the opening scene is so gothic.
Gothic is a brilliant word to describe the James Lee work.
Now, you may imagine that most crime fiction begins with a woman's body being found. And if the books Declan reviewed are anything to go by, you'd be right.
And it opens with the discovery of the body of Olive Collins. And this one opens with the discovery of a young woman who's been lashed to a wooden cross. And she's this novel starts out with a young woman being discovered outside Galway Laboratories of Darcy.
But the crime fiction is not all the same. For example, Declan introduced us to a genre called
screwball noir. Rena Ruggiero is the widow of Brooklyn mobster Gentle Vic.
Now, whatever about listening to the plot of this one, have a listen to Kay Sheehy's reaction at the end.
And she receives some unwelcome attention from her neighbour Enzio. So she bashes him over the head with a glass ashtray. And when Enzio doesn't show any signs of recovering, she steals his car and she finds herself going on the run with an ex-porn star, Lacey Wolfstein, and Lucia, who is Rena's teenage granddaughter. Rena has managed to steal a suitcase full of cash which belongs to the mob. So they're on the run, being pursued by a sledgehammer-wielding maniac.
Oh.
Oh, indeed. Declan Burke with Kay Sheehy on Arena. Another presenter reaction you need to hear is that of Richard Curran in The Business. He's talking to Natasha Gillies, an event planner.
Another part of your business is communions, right? Mm. Communions seem to be getting bigger and bigger in relation
They're
to
like
the level of organisation and the spend.
Mini weddings.
Like what?
Last year, for example, one of the ladies told me she spent almost 2,000 euros on the little girl's dress. So it's extremely expensive, but it depends on the budget the person has. So we can run with a budget from 500 euros to 5,000. We can roll out the red...
What would I get for 5,000?
We can roll out red carpets. We can put big flamed lights up the, you know, the entrance. You can have a lit up dance floor. You can have absolutely anything you want. You can have tight ropes, you know, dancers.
Families are going for that,
are they? They certainly are. Now, that would be the extreme.
Yeah.
I mean, but the average communion would have, like, we would bring in caterers, the cake, you know, the entertainment, which you can have 4 or 5 different types of entertainment on the day, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, the budget would be roughly around 1,500 euros and to 2,000.
Who's spending that kind of money?
Everybody.
Everybody. Well, not everybody, but I presume you mean a lot of people.
Well, a lot of people. I mean, we've been booked out since last September.
Natasha Gillies on The Business with Richard Curran on Easter Saturday morning. As one woman who wrote to playback at rte.ie suggesting that piece said, if he'd heard that interview, Jesus would have turned in his tomb if he wasn't already getting ready to rise out of it. Another example of religion going a bit awry was recalled on Mooney Goes Wild. In the programme, Terry Flanagan was exploring the world of blackbirds. There's a famous story about St. Kevin sticking his hand out of a window while praying in Glendalough and a blackbird nesting in it. It's a lovely story, but that's not the one Gillian Stewart told Terry Flanagan.
This is actually the story I know all the children prefer. And basically, St. Kevin was living as a hermit here in his cell high above the lake in Glendalough. And all he was eating was local plants like wild sorrel and stuff like that that grows locally. And there was a local chieftain who had a daughter called Kathleen. Kathleen fancied St. Kevin and wanted him to give up the holy life, settle down and marry her. She decided one day that she was going to come up to him in the cell and persuade him to give up this holy life and, you know, take up with her. Anyway, she arrived at the door of the cell. St. Kevin, meanwhile, had been eating nothing but these wild plants and was probably hallucinating a bit. He looked up and what he saw was the devil standing in the door. So he jumped up and gave her a good shove and said, "Begone, you devil!" And she tumbled down the cliff and into the lake where she promptly died. Now, when St. Kevin came to after this episode and realised what he'd done, he was horrified and he sort of said, I'm a holy man, I can't do things like this, I can't go around killing people. So he decided as his penance he was going to stand in the cold waters of the lake with his arms outstretched and pray. And while he was there, a blackbird came and nested on his hand, and he said that was God's way of saying you're going to have to stay here for a good while longer. And he did so until the blackbird raised its chicks.
Gillian Stewart with Terry Flanagan on Mooney Goes Wild.
Oh, sinner man, can't you hear me say, oh, sinner man, you better get out on your knees and pray.
Get out,
get out,
get out,
get out on your knees and pray.
Get out,
get out,
get out,
get out. You better get out on your knees and pray.
There ain't no doubting the message from the Del McCoury Band.
Philip King from The South Wind Blows, the epitome of laid-back radio. And if you like your radio reclined, John Kelly on Lyric FM will do it for you. While other presenters will work out a programme in their heads and then write it all down in a slick script, John Kelly kind of skips that bit.
I'm in danger of getting stuck in a groove back there, but I'm going to play a couple more. T-Bone Walker, great, great guitar player, although I've just realised I haven't brought in the version of it I meant to play. This is kind of curious too.
John invites you into his mind and allows you watch the show being put together in real time.
Earl Palmer's on drums, so that can't go wrong. Is he on this track though? See, when you start these conversations, then I'm conscious of people with anorex getting very excited and looking things up. Let me just check T-Bone Shuffle. No, actually, Oscar Bradley is a drummer on this. And just to complete things, Billy Hadnott is on bass, Lloyd Glenn's on piano, T-Bone Walker on guitar and vocals. Actually, that mightn't be right either. Who cares? Actually, Barney Kessel is on this. Or he might be. If he's not, he should be. Barney Kessel, T-Bone Walker.
John Kelly from Lyric FM. The mental image of the week might have been that we heard on 2FM when the architect Dermot Bannon was on. He talked of the roof of a house behaving like an eyebrow over the view from the house. He was a guest on the Owen McDermott show. Now, before he came on, Owen told us that he was going to give Dermot Bannon a hard time.
You know the way you spent a good proportion of last year travelling the world to exotic locations, visiting wonder architecture, different countries.
Yes.
Because you're a guest in other countries.
Yeah.
I have a theory that you internally are actually really underwhelmed with some of the places and you have to go, this is amazing, because someone's been so kind to let you into their gaff. I'm thinking the Australian ones particularly.
Why did I look underwhelmed?
No. I'm like, Dermot Bannon should get an Oscar. What was the one? And it was in the pure middle of nowhere. It had beautiful views. It was a glass box and it had the curved white roof.
Oh yes, that was Harry Seidler. It was outside Sydney. Did you know that was a tent? Like,
poor to average.
Really?
Yeah, it was a couple of glass plates with a roof plunked on top.
But you sold it
so well.
No, what was really cool about that house, it reminded me of, do you know when you're in a tent and sometimes a gust of wind goes in and it kind of blows this kind of curve, you know, and the whole tent gets taut. And it was like that. It was like it was a flat roof, but it caught a little bit of wind and it pulled it up into this curve. And then that curve did so many things. It came down and formed an eyebrow. So that when you came out, you only saw the trees and then you saw the sky. It slowly revealed. I thought it was stunning.
Dermot Bannon with Owen McDermott. Later in the show, Owen and the team dealt with a far more important housing issue.
This is a response to this girl, Christine, who applied for a room in a flat share in an apartment, right?
Yeah. Capcorn,
this is the response she got. This is the screenshot of the message itself. So, hey, Christine, sorry I haven't responded earlier. My concern is that you're a Capricorn. Our main goal is to keep things egalitarian without anyone being, in inverted commas, in charge or dominating the household. I love Capricorns, but I don't think I could live with one or be in a band with another one. The Virgo Gemini house is a special place where soft, mutable signs get to run free, untethered by cardinal authorities.
What a load of absolute toss.
Owen McDermott and the team on the Owen McDermott Show. And Owen McDermott is the Drive presenter on 2FM. I'm mentioning all of this to you because I don't want you to get caught out if you're ever a quiz contestant on 2FM's Breakfast Republic.
He's the Drive presenter on 2FM. His girlfriend's called Aoife. Oh, he used to be presenting the after show of The Voice. He's stupid hair.
He was on The Voice. He was on The
Voice. He had big hair before.
He was on the presenters on The Voice.
Mull McMurmis.
Oh, God. This is awful.
Sorry.
Owen McDermott?
Yeah.
Ah, Sean.
What? Sean, don't worry. Sean,
listen, don't worry.
That was a tough one.
Yeah, not really.
Good man, Sean, on 2FM's Breakfast Republic. And he needn't have felt bad because the Breakfast Republic crowd are well able to make eejits of themselves as well.
Lottie Ryan, you're a disgrace to your profession.
What?
I'm disgusted with you.
What did I do?
And I think people were really disturbed by hearing this because you were doing your entertainment bulletin. It's very serious.
Oh, no.
And this happened.
Nicki Minaj has parted ways with her longtime managers, Cortez Bryant and Guy Robertson of the Blue. The split was amicable.
Guy has also managed Lil Wayne, G-Eazy.
Oh my God. I'm not angry with you. I'm just disappointed. I mean, you're on the national airwaves.
I got this a case 2FM. Of the giggles.
Lottie, Jen and Keith on Breakfast Republic on 2FM.
Playback on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
Radio Éireann, the Irish Broadcasting Service, presents To Boston and Back.
The documentary on One archive programme last week was made by Norris Davidson in 1959. A great combination of a documentarian and a showman. For example, listen to how he ends the programme. The story was the first flight of an Aer Lingus plane from Dublin to Boston. Norris only spent a short time in the US before flying back. The trip was so quick that when he got back to his car in Dublin airport...
America and back and the engine's not even curled.
Despite that bit of showbiz though, Norris made real use of the portable recording equipment to capture a sense of a trip on a transatlantic flight in 1959.
Lights out, or reduced to a glow. And already, I'm further west from Ireland than I've ever been, and I'm being gently rocked to sleep. Putting out the lights has brought up a wonderful mountain landscape outside. Only the mountains are clouds sleeping under the moon. Our shadow is racing across them with a rainbow surrounding it.
But it was when he landed in the States and kept the machine running that you get an idea of how this must have sounded to an Irish audience in the late 1950s.
Outside the airport, a line of automobiles was waiting for us, drawn up behind the mayor's limousine and a motorcycle escort. The cars had been all temporarily decorated with green posters of an Irish character. All this and a cigar-chewing driver I'd anticipated. But When we moved off, the driver's peaked cap turned to us and the driver said...
I hope none of you gentlemen mind being driven by a woman.
Goodness, yes, I do. I'm scared to death.
Well, I guess we'll just have to be extra careful. Can't stop the mayor's motorcade to put you down.
From the documentary on One archive to Boston and back, and Brendan Courtney's mother would have liked the woman driver in that.
My father bought, now they both had a business, as some sort of public statement, bought my mother a Mini, and she walked into the driving, and she said, you drive that, I'm not driving that. And I remember that conversation, and she said, you drive that, and I'll drive the Renault, how about that? And I remember, yeah, why did you buy her a smaller car? But my father, one of 14 from Crumlin, kind of went, oh yeah, why did I buy you a smaller car?
Brendan was on the Hourglass programme during the week. It had been recorded on International Women's Day. Another guest on the programme was Deborah Summerin.
My mum and me had always had this really, really turbulent relationship.
And when we moved to Nice, she was going through a lot of depression because she split up with my dad, and it was a very, very bad breakup. And listen, you know, mums and daughters, like, we've never gotten, had that very close relationship. I was always a daddy's girl. And that's how I went into care for the first time when I was 11. I missed curfew, and my mum wouldn't let me in, and she threw a bucket of water out the top floor window. I went to a friend's house because I didn't know what to do, and that's how I ended up in care for the first time.
11.
Yeah. I suppose I don't speak about her in an ill way. Like, I carry a lot of love in my heart for her because as I've grown up, I understand mental health better. And I'm a mum to a 10-year-old. And having one of my kids taken off me and not knowing how to cope and just feeling so helpless. So, yeah, I have a lot more understanding for her and a lot more compassion.
Deborah Summerin. Brendan Courtney contrasted his experience with Deborah's. She found support outside the home, while he found his at home, and he needed it.
My schooling let me down because I was really, really badly bullied. Because culturally, I was one of those kids who couldn't hide my femininity. I was quite a camp little boy. I had blonde. My mother was a hairdresser, so I had this blonde page boy. And kids in the playground would say, "Is that a boy or a girl?" all the time, which would just kill me, crush me. But I could go home and feel loved and secure. So I kind of knew they were all wrong. Even at 11, I knew they're bullies, they're wrong. So I had the confidence to quit the school, I imagine on my own, for 20 days in a row. Rather than explain it, I just left the school and I was caught. And I kind of knew I'd be caught. And then my parents went to school, and my parents lifted me out of the school straight away. It all came out. Mm-hmm. And then went to Moyle Park College in Clondalkin, which is a really tough boys' school in Clondalkin. But super sound, like brilliant. And I arrived there in my red leather jacket and my bleach blonde hair and sort of reinvented myself over the summer. And I remember the really tough kids couldn't make me out and just thought I was fabulous. And yeah, I'm just like, "You're mad. Come on with us." So I kind of had this great, so fifth and sixth year in Clondalkin and Tala were great. Like, I sort of went back home.
Brendan Courtney with a condensed life story from the Hourglass programme on Radio 1. And there were several examples of distilled life stories on Radio 1 this week. For example, on Drama on 1, Peter Daly described how he got into acting.
I qualified as an accountant. When I went away to college, I didn't really know what to do. So I originally started in Galway RTC, and then I did business studies, because when you don't know what you want to do, you just do business. But I was actually quite good at it. So I transferred to DCU and I did an accounting and finance degree, and I got a job at one of the big accountancy firms, and I qualified as a chartered accountant. And the day I qualified, 30th of April 1999, I left full-time accountancy and became as much of a full-time actor as I could.
Peter Daly on the Drama on One. And then on the Ryan Tubridy Show, writer John Boyne was on talking about a new book he's written for children about a child who has a transgender sibling. John has been criticised for the way he's written the book and for saying that he doesn't describe himself as a cis man.
To call somebody a cis man or cis woman, mm-hmm. a cis person, means what?
Well, effectively, you, Ryan, are a cis man in yes. the fact that you, and I am a cis man in the sense that the gender that we were told we were when we were born, you know, male, is the gender that we still identify with.
Right. Okay. And what would you like to be referred to as?
Just as a man, you know? Like, I don't even want to be referred to as a gay man. You know, I just want to be referred to as a man. Now, I have no problem if somebody else wants to continually refer to me as a cis man. That's their choice of word. It doesn't offend me in any way. It is, you know, grammatically, because it comes from the Latin as the opposite of trans. It doesn't bother me as such. Mm. But I too, surely, have the right to self-identify.
In an article in the Irish Times, a transgender rights activist named Aoife Martin took John Boyne to task for that.
She says, whether Boyne likes it or not, he's a cis man and he has cis privilege. It's just a pity he can't seem to recognise it.
OK, this I would take exception with, this cis male privilege thing.
What is that? There are people listening, by the way, bamboozled by the language.
Cis male privilege is basically because you haven't gone through the struggle that I've gone through, you don't know anything about it, and you're coming from a place of ignorance and privilege. Let me tell you this, and I'd say this to you, Ryan, I'd say this to Aoife, and to anybody listening. I grew up in the 70s and 80s in Ireland. As a boy, I knew I was gay, and it was in a country where homosexuality was still illegal. So I grew up in a school being told that I was wrong, I would probably get AIDS, and I would probably die, or I would go to jail. Was that my cis male privilege? Then I came to, you know, in senior school, And the same priests who were telling me these things were the same priests who were putting their hands down my pants. Was that my cis male privilege? And then I left school and I became an adult. And I was afraid to go into places like the George. I was terrified of it because I felt dirty. I felt shamed. I felt like a less than human person. So I was unable to actually be my own sexual person. Was that part of my cis male privilege? And then once I started writing, I had to fight like any writer does to get published. I had two unpublished novels. When I finally got published, my books didn't sell. I got dropped by my publisher. And at the age of 31, I was basically out on the street with my career over before it had even begun. Was that my cis male privilege? I then spent years, years trying to get myself into a place where I could feel comfortable being a gay man and forming a relationship. I had many bad relationships. Then I found a wonderful human being who I thought I was going to spend my life with. And that, after 11 years, didn't work out. And I went through 3 years of pain. Was that part of my cis male privilege? And finally, when I ended up in a hospital last time before I was on this show, ended up in hospital having tried to take my own life because of all of these experiences put together over 40-something years of my life, and going back home feeling, if I could just clap my hands and go to sleep forever, that is what I would do. Is that part of my cis male privilege? So I would say to Aoife Martin, you don't know me, you have never met me, you haven't picked up the phone and called me or texted me, and you haven't even responded to the conciliatory mail that I sent. So do not take a position that you know who I am any more than I know who you are. You do not.
John Boyne from The Ryan Tuberty Show.
Morning over a dirty wall, light dawning, a loving look from a strange familiar face.
Laura Quirk and Claire Kinsella, who perform as Lemoncello, heard here on Simply Folk.
Morning, morning, rusty voices soaring like tattered kites, we saunter on the wind. We saunter on the wind.
From Simply Folk with Ruth Smith on Radio 1 on Sunday evening. Earlier on Sunday evening, the poetry programme featured poets from abroad living in Ireland. They talked about their experiences living here and the poems they've written about life as a foreigner in this country. One of the poets was Belgian Mark Heesemans.
This poem is called The Wannabe. How are ya? A greeting that leaves the door open to talk the hind legs of a donkey. What's the story? Lovely people, good crack and drink, flat 7-up for dicky tummies. Laugh at their quirks and oddities, or they will drive you bonkers. Not a bother. Politics, religion, football, a quagmire best avoided. You never know what jersey the other fella is wearing. Ah, sure. Try and improve your language. But it doesn't matter. They still ask, where are you from then? Just to place your accent. It'll be grand. Then your mother tongue, slipping. Detribalized, surprised. Loss of identity. Or embracing another one? No longer belonging there. And I sure am a blow in here. Wanna be Irish, you ask? Nah, only want to be.
The Belgian poet Mark Heesemans from the poetry programme with Olivia O'Leary. Another writer born abroad but who made his home in Ireland was the late Peter Yankovsky. He was a regular on Sunday Miscellany over the years and was featured in one of this week's programmes celebrating 50 years of Sunday Miscellany.
Once upon a time, I was an evil dwarf.
In this piece, he's talking about acting in Germany in front of 1,000 children in the pantomime based on the Grimm's fairy tale Snow White and Rose Red.
The great moment for me came, having done my evil worst.
As Peter said, he was the evil dwarf.
Rubbing my black-nailed claws, hump, bumping the withered red root on my head, twitching, and proclaimed triumphantly, to be evil is fun. 1,000 voices screamed back at me, no! Oh, yes, it is, and no again. It was like standing in the noise of 100 jet engines. The air was thick with disapproval. The evil dwarf, of course, was in his element. Wallowing in it, he worked the crowd of little innocents for what it was worth. And then, the totally unexpected. The absolutely unexpectable happened. In the middle of all that turmoil, the jumping and screaming, a tiny little girl in the front row stood up, a blonde, blue-eyed little snowflake, and shyly, but also like somebody who deep inside knew exactly what she was doing, walked up to the ramp, so terribly close to the dreadful dwarf, raised her arm and offered me a sweet. To a howl of protest from a thousand other kids, and went back to her seat. Now, how to react to that? Well, I tell you, I felt totally deflated. But also, as an actor, deeply understood and appreciated. The frozen heart had to melt for a moment. I thanked her awkwardly, ate my sweet, and for the rest of the evening had to work hard to regain my evil reputation. The show had to go on. Since then, I've often wondered what had gone on in the mind of that little girl, and what may have become of her in her later years. A child that at the age of 4 or 5 had risked her life to bring solace to another being who was unhappy and evil.
The late Peter Yankovsky from Miscellany 50. And that image, the power of one person with a firm belief confronting evil, that image was to the fore on Wednesday afternoon.
We don't have Dumbledore's time turner that will enable us to change the past. But within each of us, we have the power to create the kind of society that Lyra envisioned.
This is Lyra McKee's sister Nicola reading at her funeral on Wednesday.
In the words of Lyra herself, we must change our own world, one piece at a time. Now let's get to work.
Lyra McKee's sister Nicola on Wednesday, and if the urgency of that work was in doubt, a law lecturer from Griffith College in Dublin who came into Drive Time would dispel that. He is Tamil Venthan Ananthavinayagan, and he came in to talk about Sri Lanka after the weekend bombings of hotels and Christian churches there.
The war came to an end 10 years ago, but Sri Lanka is certainly post-war, but not post-conflict. Mm. Sri Lanka is still a highly inflicted society that has not healed its wounds. We didn't have a proper transitional justice mechanism. We didn't have a reconciliation between the different communities that have fought for more than 20 years in the country. So to this end, the country is still in conflict, and we have not really reconciled.
Tamil Venthan Ananthavinayagan on Drive Time with Mary Wilson.
I commend our political leaders for standing together in Craigan on Good Friday.
Back to the Lyra McKee funeral, and the sound of the week on radio must have been the applause prompted by Father Martin McGill.
Why in God's name does it take the death of a 29-year-old woman with her whole life in front of her?
The following day on Morning Ireland, he told Gavin Jennings that he wasn't trying to publicly blame politicians, but he noticed their discomfort in the church. Gavin Jennings then addressed Father Martin's own discomfort.
You spoke directly and very warmly to Lyra's partner, acknowledging their love and their relationship, but do you accept that the church that you're a member of, like the biggest party in the North, refused Lyra equality as a gay woman in her life?
I suppose, obviously, the Catholic Church, along with many of the other Christian churches, though I certainly acknowledge that there's a variety of views on this, and I would have to say within the Catholic Church there's also a variety of views as well. There's an official line on the sanctity of marriage and understood as a man and a woman, and yet at the same time I'm also very conscious that there's a real variety of views even within the Catholic Church as well. I suppose from a pastoral point of view, I certainly was acknowledging the love that existed between Lyra and Sarah. I certainly had to acknowledge that, and willingly acknowledge that.
Father Martin McGill with Gavin Jennings on Morning Ireland, and back to drive time and the killing of hundreds by bombs in Sri Lanka. Dr. Anathavinayagan says the only solution for that country is inclusion.
The government must use this as a cathartic moment to really engage in a communication process, in a dialogue with the people from the different communities, and to embark upon a journey where Sri Lanka is considered as a multi-ethnic, multi-religious country where everybody has his or her place.
Dr. Tamil Venthan Anantavinayagan on Drive Time on Tuesday.
Playback on RT Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
Over the weekend, Gary Moran was teeing up the Leinster-Toulouse game when he spoke a radio truth.
It's a good day for sunbathing. I'm sure there's a few people lying on beaches, Irish beaches, listening to this. Two sides of great pedigree.
And it's a fact. There was a time when the bank holiday beaches and parks in Ireland would have had the reedy sound of Micheál O'Hare mixing with the sounds of children playing chasing. But that was before there was a choice of radio stations. So while Michael Corcoran was calling the rugby, RTE2XM was playing jazz. That was from a 2XM show with the programme title of the week. It's Robotnik's Random Rampage Archives. And then RTE Pulse had a programme even more suited to the hot weather over the weekend.
Hey, this is Yuki Beb and you are listening to the future sounds of Soul Etiquette Radio.
Soul Etiquette on RTE Pulse on Sunday, which if you remember was gloriously sunny, a far cry from Storm Hannah. A man named Pinky would have been busy on Sunday. He drives an ice cream van for a living. On Monday, he was in with Maggie Doyle on Radio 1 because he's featured in a new film documentary about the ice cream van business. During the conversation, Pinky told Maggie about his father's career.
He died when I was 17. And
it's very young to lose your dad.
Well, he had a rake of businesses in the meantime. The earliest one I remember was he had a dry cleaners, a sewing machine factory, ice cream, video shops, snooker hall, sweet shops, hardware.
So you didn't pick it up off the floor, as they say?
No. Well, if I had an ounce of what my dad had now, I'd be a millionaire. But now I only have a little touch of it. But my dad was fantastic.
And what sort of, like, did he talk to you about? Did he instill a message into you, or did you just watch what he was doing and sort of?
Well, my dad got on great with everybody. Like he was very social, and he got on. He had the gift of the gab. He talked to everybody, and everybody loved him.
Do you think he'd like the documentary?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, well he was always a film fan, so
it would have been
he was a big time film fan. Well, he brought video to Ireland.
Did he?
He opened the first video shop. That was Star Video in Parnell Street back in the day. That would have been 1978.
So he was really kind of ahead of his time. He knew what people wanted. Ice creams and videos.
Ahead of the curve kind of thing. And he'd see a business and then he'd set it up. But his problem was he might sell the business and move on to something else. So he had that entrepreneur kind of gambler spirit. So he'd get bored doing something. He'd move on then.
Ice cream van driver Pinky with Maggie Doyle on Monday. Another businessman's story was told this week extensively. He was Fergal Quinn of Super Quinn Supermarkets, who died on Wednesday. By all accounts, he was a man who revered the ordinary, not in quality, but in task. The people who shop are often the people who look after homes and families, and their skills are, it seems, dismissible. Not supposedly as valuable as surgeons, engineers, scientists, and so on. But for Fergal Quinn, their work as shoppers was a serious business, and he took the business of shopping seriously too, right down to important things like bag packing at the checkouts. Sinn Féin's Louise O'Reilly was a Super Quinn employee, and she spoke to Mary Wilson on Drive Time.
I wasn't long in the job, and I was packing bags. Now, there was a sort of a small training course that you would go on just to show you how to pack the bags right, and I was making hames of it, and I was there packing the bags, and Fergal came over, and he just, he showed me how to do it. He was very respectful, not patronising in any way. And when he walked away and he showed me how to do it, and there is a correct way to pack bags. I packed my bags correctly from that day on. And
and you're still packing them correctly today.
I still packed the bags correctly.
Customers...
I said to the girl at the till, I said, do with your man? Because he had been very unassuming. And she said, do you not know that Fergal Quinn? He's your boss. And only then did I realise that he was the Quinn in Super Quinn. He had been quite disarming and, you know, not in any way, you know, not in any way patronising. He just sort of said, this is how you do it. And, you know, he was right. There is a right and a wrong way to pack bags.
Louise O'Reilly on Drive Time talking about the late Fergal Quinn and the serious business of packing shopping bags. Shauna Tai does a seemingly mundane job, even though she's only 14. She helps her parents care for her 11-year-old brother Daniel, who is totally dependent.
He would have good days and bad days. Like a bad day, he would totally go against us for the whole day. He would lash out, he'd hit my mom all day, he'd scream, he'd cry. But in good days, he'd just go with us and he'd be a little bit more quiet and kind of just do what we ask him to do without hitting us or screaming or going having a big tantrum.
What do you love about him so much?
Like, I think people forget, like, at the end of the day, he is my brother and especially he's my only sibling as well. So in the house, like, he is, like, the only person that I would have. And I just have such a special, like, relationship with him. Even though he can't talk and all, like, he still communicates in his own ways. And
like, do you have little signs that you have or anything like that?
He can't talk, but he would give me a hug and a kiss. Mm. And I know by certain noises he makes that, like, he's trying to tell me, like, oh, if he gives me a hug, he'd make a special noise. So I know that he's trying to tell me, like, he loves me or whatever, like, that kind of way. Yeah.
And what about your friends? I mean, you're 14, you're kind of hanging out with your mates now. Do you get to go out with your mom and dad at all? Like, do you get to have kind of family time?
No, I don't get to go out with my mom and dad at the same, like, with them together at all. Like, I can't remember the last time I went out when it was just me and my mom and my dad. If I'm going out, it's either me and my mom or me and my dad. And I just don't get a lot of time to go out with them because we're with Daniel and he doesn't like going out to, like, public places, being around people with loads of noise. So we don't have much time together, really.
And, Shauna, for Daniel, who's 11 now, like, what services have you and your mum and dad explored for him that are available?
There's not much available for Daniel, but my mum... Like, obviously, residential care when he's older wouldn't be what everyone wants, but sometimes it's kind of, you have to be a bit selfish and think, like, when my mum and dad get to 80 and 70, like, they won't be able to deal with Daniel because he's very strong and he's tall and he's already, like, he's hurting my mum. Like, he damaged ligaments in her arm and everything. Like, he's only 11, so they're thinking, like, when he's 18, like, if he can do this to me now, how much stronger and bigger is he going to get? And obviously you don't want to be putting him in to a home,
of course.
Sometimes it's what you need and what's the best for both.
Shauna Tai, who is 14, talking about caring for her brother Daniel with Catherine Thomas. Shauna has been named Young Carer of the Year. Catherine Thomas's programme heard that some things have become easier for carers in recent years, but that they still have to fundraise for those they are caring for. Brenda O'Connell Barry, the Carer of the Year, put her frustrations in one straightforward remark.
Don't make us be as far as to be down on our hands and knees begging for help.
Brenda O'Connell Barry with Catherine Thomas on The Ray D'Arcy Show. Dave is another parent with a child with special needs. He was featured in Six Dads on Radio 1 with Colm O'Regan. Dave's daughter Ava has Down syndrome.
It's horrible to say, but, like, it's like, you know, I also think of people with special needs, they kind of look different, you know, that's a thing. But then what's nice is you start to see bits of my sister and bits of my wife, and you start to see that family resemblance, and that's kind of continued, that there's real female resemblance for many members of the family, and that was really nice to see.
At the same time, Ava's first few months weren't without their challenges, but like any child, there was still plenty of time to savour all the firsts, like Ava's first words.
A lot of it was kind of repetition. And Kiri used to go, Dad, Dad, Dad. And then you're trying to hope that she'd move into the gap and say it.
Apart from talking, Dave also remembers one very clear milestone.
The one thing that really sticks out is when she walked. Because obviously that's, you know, you have to put them in these straps that they have to use to kind of help calibrate their legs. And also, we're trying for ages to kind of get her to walk by herself. And that's a big thing for any child, but especially a child with special needs, because it brings a lot, you know, it's a big milestone. So what we ended up doing was we ended up going to IKEA and buying a little trolley. And then with that trolley, we got box, and in the box we put like sands that we bought and woodies or something, and we built this thing that you could kind of lean against, but if you pushed it a little bit, and then we started to kind of tinker with it. And then just out of nowhere one day I was taking a video because she likes to show off, right? I mean, all kids kind of do. And I just said, you know, and then out of nowhere she just walked from one end of the house to the other, and that was it. And it was just like, and that's big, but for us it was bigger, and that was superb, you know what I mean? Just a whole new lease of life for her and for us, you know. So that was a big one.
Dave from Six Dads with Colm O'Regan on Sunday on Radio 1. And Colm O'Regan was on Radio 1 on Monday with Colm O'Regan Wants a Word. This edition dealt with new technology, and they mused on what it was like for Irish hotel guests before online rating services like TripAdvisor came along.
The place was a disgrace. There was a beetle in my bed, a rat in the bathroom, and one channel on the telly was non-stop a ruckus report.
Gentlemen, Sherry.
Up every day.
We have an issue.
Oh!
Good morning, madam. Checking out. How was your stay?
Oh, it was grand. Not a bother. You know yourself.
Tara Flynn and Paul Tylak from Colm O'Regan Wants a Word on Monday on Radio 1. And that's it for this week. Playback will be back again with the podcast version next Friday afternoon and the broadcast version next Saturday morning. And to those of you who sent your suggestions to playback@rte.ie, thank you. Until next week, slán.
Playback on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories, and engrossing sports coverage.